Hello. This is John Latley's phone.
Who's this?
What do you mean, who is this?
I mean, who's this? This Mark here, and you sound just like the talking moose.
Do you mean the speech generation program for the Apple Macintosh created in the 1980s?
Yep, that's the one.
Never heard of it.
You know, I recorded an answering machine message using the talking moose when I was in college.
Yes, I know.
What do you mean you know?
Never mind. The talking moose was actually my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. I thought that hearing a familiar voice would put you more at ease.
Actually, I thought I'd be hearing John's familiar voice.
You mean like this?
John?
Ha, ha, ha. Got you.
I was wrong. That definitely did not put me at ease. What'd you do with John?
I haven't done anything.
All right, where's John?
He was playing around with some AI websites earlier and must have left me connected.
Look, we've got a show to start.
Well then, let's start the show. Welcome to the Rockbot.
Close, but not John.
You got me. Oh, I think he's coming. Here just a second, I'll connect you.
Hey Mark, I'm ready to start the opening.
Is it you this time?
What do you mean, this time?
Never mind.
Okay. This is John Latley.
And Mark Cooper.
And the Talking Moose. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Who are you talking to?
An old friend. And it seems kind of appropriate for today's show.
What to do about AI? As I recall, your doctorate is in AI?
Yes, it is.
Well then, why don't you take the monologue this week?
Will do. Thanks, and I'll see you on the other side. The most common perceptions of artificial intelligence come from the menacing computer movie genre. You know, where Skynet becomes self-aware and tries to exterminate humanity. Or HAL 9000 kills Discovery's crew when they plan to disconnect it. You know, Joshua wants to play a game of global thermonuclear war, and we're all trapped in the Matrix, so none of it matters anyway. Now, there are certainly reasons for concern, but these aren't among them, at least not for now. Instead of a horror show, think of AI like a magic trick, where you can know the secrets, but still marvel at the result. And considering what can be accomplished using neural networks, it really does seem like magic. You know, you start with a bunch of random numbers and you do some training, and the resulting application can produce both an academic essay about the Gettysburg Address and a pretty good recipe for peach cobbler. One of the things I find most interesting is that the underlying processes, architecture, and algorithms are largely the same today as they were 35 years ago when I did AI research in grad school. Now we have several orders of magnitude more computing power to apply to the problem. Now, I don't have time in 3.5 minutes to do a neural network tutorial, but the main thing you need to know is that generative AI systems don't actually know anything about anything. They're just probabilistic models. Really, really, really complex models that predict the next most likely word or word fragment given the input they've received. So if we're not worried about having to run down replicants, what should we be worried about? Well, three things: security, ethics, and accuracy. For security, new generative AI architectures have the ability to leverage a vast standard core model while at the same time learning company-specific or application-specific information. That way, you don't have to retrain the whole thing for only a small amount of new information. Problems arise, though, when the system is trained using sensitive or even confidential data, and then the answers to seemingly innocuous questions include that data. As I said before, the model doesn't know any better. This is such a significant concern that more than a quarter of organizations have banned the use of generative AI by their employees, and most have strict guardrails around the use of generative AI. Second is ethics. A time is coming, not too long from now, when we won't be able to trust audio and video because the deepfakes will be so good. When that happens, real crimes will go unpunished because of uncertainty about the evidence. Students are already using AI to write their research papers, and teachers are using AI to try to catch them. Then there's algorithm bias and misinformation. After all, if the data used to train the system is biased, whether racially or politically or whatever, the results returned by the model will be biased. We've seen several examples of this in the news recently, and if that weren't enough, concerns are arising about the sweatshop labor that's often used to accomplish the supervised learning. And then third is accuracy. It's axiomatic that training with dirty data results in faulty models, you know, garbage in, garbage out. Dirty data places an upper bound on neural network performance and accuracy, and if you don't understand your data, and especially what it's supposed to contain, you're not going to be able to start to assess data quality. The time to worry about security, ethics, and accuracy is now, before a serious data mishap. At least that's what I think. Your thoughts, ideas, comments, and perspectives are welcome and encouraged. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com. I'm delighted to have Wendy Lawhead here with us today. She is a seasoned data professional with over 20 years of experience leading analytics initiatives across a range of industries and for a list of companies that reads a little like the local Yellow Pages, including Pfizer, McKesson, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, West Cancer Center, FedEx, Harris Entertainment, AutoZone, and the Office of Naval Research. Wendy specializes in advanced insights development, artificial intelligence, and generative AI applications, which is convenient because that's the topic of today's podcast. So Wendy, welcome to Rock Bottom.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be able to talk to you today about AI and all the fun things that I've been involved in, maybe.
Now, you and I worked together several years ago, and our paths have crossed a couple of times in the interim, but where are you now, and what have you been up to?
So today I actually work for Pfizer. I am the director of analytics engineering, which is under the commercial division for Pfizer. We're responsible for building the data pipelines that help with the machine learning algorithms and the AI functions at Pfizer to help market our pharmaceuticals.
So a lot of data preparation and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Our team actually works on developing the data products that are used across the enterprise so that we can help drive the data-driven insights that everybody likes to speak about.
So in terms of data products, so you have your data product marketplace and your pipeline and curation and maintenance.
Oh, yeah. My team isn't responsible for releasing these data products into the marketplace. And so our customers across Pfizer can access them and use them to help build whatever type of analytics or reporting or anything that they would require where they require trusted data. So it's a good responsibility.
That's excellent. So you've got, as I mentioned before, very broad experience with a lot of different companies. And so I'm curious, how have you seen AI transform the field of analytics in recent years?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been doing this for a little while. And back before data science was data science and AI was AI, we were using data and trying to develop insights using Excel spreadsheets and, you know, manually curated data sources and a lot of pretty archaic ways of trying to drive insights using data. And we did it, but it took a long time, you know, and it was tedious and required lots of man hours. And the data was not wonderful. You know, you had to kind of, you know, use what you had access to at the time. And I'll tell you, since those days back when I was forecasting using Excel, doing data models, now we have full-blown machine learning algorithms that help us, you know, determine what the forecast is going to be for certain things. And oh my gosh, the amount of data. I mean, that is really, what is it? The tsunami. I remember back in the day, everybody talked about the tsunami of data coming. Well, it came.
Yep,
and it's still
here.
Coming.
It's definitely here.
It's totally here. And some organizations are a whole lot better at managing it than others. And so that's the interesting part that I've seen. You know, being involved in a lot of different industries has helped me see that organizations themselves and industries themselves are in different spaces in terms of where they are with their modernization and how they handle this right now. So that's the interesting part to see.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So how do you manage that tsunami of data?
Yeah, so a lot of it has to do with infrastructure and a lot of it has to do with modernization. And I think, you know, I've taken many different positions with organizations and been really excited to, you know, to lead analytics or data science or whatever it may be. But, you know, you go in with these grand ideas of, okay, we're going to go and build all these things. And then you enter into this landscape of like, okay, this is what I have to work with. And so you have to actually modernize in almost every position you enter into. And that's part of the job. And that's a lot of the things that you write about on your resume, you know, what are your skill sets?
Yep.
Modernization is totally one of those that you have to really speak to. Yeah. Just depends on who you work with and where you are.
Exactly. Now, so what have been the biggest challenges you faced when implementing AI and analytics?
Data acquisition.
Yeah.
Getting a hold of clean data, getting a hold of the right data, accurate data. dealing with politics within organizations in terms of who's responsible for what, working within IT and working outside of IT presents its own challenges with a lot of different organizations. So you have to figure out where you can position yourself. I think in an organization, how you can approach leadership to really expand upon the value prop of making changes and investing in, you know, some of these data sources. A lot of organizations don't believe it's, you know, the responsibility of the business maybe to fund some of these things, because they view it as IT things. And then, you know, you might go somewhere else and the business is like, we want to run all of our own analytics in IT, and they don't want it in IT, you know? And so where your organization lives in an enterprise is really important, and how you can leverage the assets and then acquire data, and how you make it valuable to the leadership to get your funding, pretty much.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and that's been a major theme of this podcast, is data is people.
Yes.
Or what arguments have you found to be successful working with upper management, getting them to support analytics?
So I think my word of advice for anybody who's trying to make hay in this industry is to try and provide speed to value. And really, when I say that, you're not going to be able to boil the ocean. A lot of these organizations, you come in and you're like, wow, this is the data landscape, and there is a lot to do here. And a lot of people, I think, get involved in that, and they start building out this grandiose roadmap of like all of these things they're going to try and change and fix. And it requires a lot of politics and a lot of negotiation and you know, solicitation. And I think your best bet is to work with your business customer, who you are trying to help with these tools, figure out what their pain points are, identify a POC or a use case where you can add value quickly, and then leverage that use case and use the value that can come from that POC to try and, you know, implement whatever kind of investment you might need from leadership to try and deploy something. Because a lot of this involves, you know, hiring the right people with the right skills, which is expensive. It's having the infrastructure to do a lot of this processing, which is expensive, as we know, you know, and a lot of it is cloud-based, and some organizations still aren't super comfortable using cloud-based tools at this point, and they're still managing things with their legacy infrastructure, which is archaic, but yet it's what they know. And, you know, when you enter into a new environment and propose all of these things in a space where there's unknowns possibly with legal, there's unknowns with data privacy, if you don't have the right staff that knows much about, you know, information security, you know, some leadership, they don't even want to enter into that unknown landscape because of risk. And so you have to make your use case something that's safe, you know, provides speed to value, and is going to drive, you know, business results, hopefully quickly, and then use that to leverage to, you know, move on into even more complex items.
Oh, yeah. Getting that out quickly, I think, is really key. And building on those early successes.
Right. And you don't always have to push everything that's in your data environment to the cloud. And so that's the other thing too. It's identifying what elements you need, you know, to provide that MVP, and maybe stick to that, because when you start pushing whole data environments, you know, to maybe a cloud, and then there's a lot of planning involved and a lot of lift, it's just too much on the front end.
Yep. And then the sticker shock on the back end.
Correct. Yep. The risk.
Yep. So let's talk about some specifics there. You know, I'm sure you have a whole bunch of projects that you pick from, but is there one successful use case in particular that you can discuss where AI-driven analytics led to a significant business transformation?
Let's see. There's quite a few. I'm going to speak to something that isn't not as massive, but personal to me. And it was when I got my job at West Cancer Center here in Memphis, Tennessee. It was my first job in healthcare, and it's why I'm in healthcare now. But it was the fact that I entered into, again, another environment where it's an industry that I was told was behind the ball with modernization. Healthcare has been, you know, a laggard a bit because of, you know, data privacy restrictions and so on. And so when I was approached for this job, I actually wasn't seeking a job. A headhunter came and asked me if I wanted to go work for this organization. I was like, well, I don't know much about healthcare or like oncology, but I'll go. And I was pleasantly surprised because A, the leadership trusted me. B, I could use my skills to build something, you know, from scratch that could really drive impact. And so I was hired as the healthcare information data science manager, which was it was probably the longest title I'd ever had at that time. And I was so excited because I had data science in my title for once.
Fit it all on a business card.
Yes, I actually tried to fit it on a business card. It was a challenge, but it was fun because I was kind of the one man show, you know, at this organization. And I had come from prior to that experience, I was at FedEx, where you were, and FedEx is a large, you know, ecosystem of lots of organizations and politics and those things that happen with, you know, large enterprise. And so here I am going from a large organization to a really small organization, but I had more autonomy and trust. And so it was fun. So my job when I worked there involved standing up their data analytics platform, which helped their providers or their oncologists with dashboards to help them understand, you know, where they were with their patients. Like if they had patients that were coming in on a particular day, they knew that, you know, they needed these types of, you know, actions taken. And so it was really actions oriented type analytics that I was putting together at the time. It wasn't huge machine learning or anything crazy, but it was basically putting the information in front of the people at the organization that could help drive patient care, which was really it was touching to me. And it helped me feel like my work was having a real impact. And so I got more and more involved in the analytics at this organization. I used some tools that were, you know, low code to build end-to-end pipelines, basically, with data. I was able to stand up some Tableau dashboards and, like, put these things in front of the oncologists. And it was like, wow, impact, you know, taking data. And so it was a challenge because I had to, you know, hire my very first data scientist, which was super exciting for me because I get to interview a data scientist. I was like, okay, do you know how to do this? And it was fun to just participate in that project, but I can go on and on about it. It's just one of those things. And it's why I went and pursued my master's in healthcare administration, because I knew I needed a graduate degree, and I was teetering between the MBA and the MHA. And I was like, well, I'm in healthcare now, so I'm going to be doing healthcare and I'm going to administer a hospital one day. So yeah, that was what got me into all of this. So yeah.
Yep. Interesting and impactful really is all we're looking for in projects.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really what got me. That's why I'm working for Pfizer now, because I just was loving healthcare and I could see that there was so much need for making these types of tools and transformation. But oh my gosh, things are changing so quickly right now.
Yep. So speaking of moving forward, how do you see the future of AI and analytics evolving over the next several years? And what are some emerging trends that businesses should be aware of?
Well, there's so many things. And so this is why I'm a news junkie. I spend a lot of time on, maybe too much time some days. I get up in the morning early and I'm on my phone and I'm reading LinkedIn and, you know, any kind of news industry news that I can. And I subscribe to the Wall Street Journal and try and see what people are doing. And so there's so many things going on out there. Really, it's like retail, healthcare, finance, every single sector is working on new ways to utilize AI and implement these tools. But I mean, I can go on and on. I think the trends, though, that are interesting that I'm trying to learn more about, it requires saying, you know, really, you have to be adamant about learning when you're in this industry. And so, like, I hear things that people are talking about, and I have to go figure out what that even means. Like, what are we talking about here? And so explainable AI is one thing. That's one of the trends that's really big right now, because now the movement is to, okay, there's these AI models out there and they're black boxes and nobody knows what they're doing. And so what are they actually doing? And to be able to build and implement models in the workplace and the enterprise and making them transparent or interpretable and allowing other users to understand how the decisions are made is really kind of on the forefront right now. And it's, so when you're building, you got to be able to provide information about these so that the, you know, your organization can act. Remember, we were talking about ethics. You have to be able to prove that your models are not harming your customers or harming the public and these sorts of things. So that's one of the trends. So being able to build models with explainable AI, edge computing. So what I'm seeing too is this trend that instead of taking all of your data and processing it in one place, a lot of you know, organizations are now trying to integrate AI and edge computing for, like, Tesla for their autonomous vehicles and stuff. So what they're doing is they're processing, their algorithms are processing the data from sensors and cameras that are within the vehicle itself. It's not pushing it back to another data center or something like that to do the decision making. So the real time decision making is really I think the target state for a lot of these AI models now. And so that means pushing the processing into a different areas. And then hyper personalization, if you're in retail, that's the thing right now, you know, hyper personalization, highly customized experiences for your customers, or real-time data, predictive analytics, retail and financial services, that's a big deal. And then, you know, sustainability, everybody's interested in how much energy we're using for these models.
Yep. So here at the Rock Bottom Data Feed, we ask all of our guests the same two questions to conclude the interview. So here's the first. Who is a non-technology leader that you admire and why? And how can their leadership be applied to our data space?
All right, here you go. And this is funny because a lot of people, when they hear this, they're like, wait, what? So I am very much a fan of an individual named Mantak Chia, who is a Taoist master. And he is the creator of the Healing Tao. And if you don't know what that is, it's an Eastern art that is basically health-based. And I've actually studied with this individual several times. This man is 80 years old, and you wouldn't think he was 80 years old. He practices, Tai Chi and Qigong and all of these Eastern arts. And I learned so much about how to balance, I think, my life. Being in technology, you can get burnout really easily, and you spend a lot of time in front of the computer. And that art, that Taoism art, has really taught me to balance myself and to get outside and to connect with nature, connect with myself, look inward, spend time, you know, taking care of my brain, since I spend so much time, like I said, you know, noodling over all of this data and analytics. It can really chew yourself up in your energy. So you got to watch your energy levels. So yeah, that is my person.
I have to look them up. And then our second question, if you could snap your fingers and instantly make one thing happen having to do with data, what would that one thing be?
Ah, I love this. That's a great question. Okay. Being in healthcare, I would love to be able to connect to a patient's health record in a way that the patient was comfortable with their provider, and be able to provide the tools to be able to deliver healthcare appropriately in this country. It is, when I studied for my master's in healthcare administration, obviously a lot of the content that I had studied had dealt with, you know, disparities and like inequities with like healthcare delivery and like pharmacy deserts and like the ways that this country kind of lacks in helping our patients. And so there's so many challenges, and a lot of them stem from data privacy. And so I feel like until we can overcome the data privacy restrictions and actually open up that box and to be able to have access to the data that's actually going to help impact patients' lives, that's one of my passions. And so if I could fix that right now, that would be the thing I would fix, because I would love to build the tools that would help.
Yeah. That would be a very good thing. Also on that list, and we've talked about it before, is becoming a chief data and analytics officer. And and I'm confident that that wish will one day come true.
I would love that for anybody, because it went from a chief data officer to, wait, a chief data and analytics officer. Now we've got chief data and AI officers. And I was like, I don't know. I think I just want to be the data person. So whatever that means, in charge of an organization that helps with data and analytics, I don't care what that title is. It would be great just to help.
Chief data person.
That's what we are.
Well, thank you very much, Wendy. We'll have you back in just a few minutes for our famous game show.
Okay.
And thanks to our sponsor, the experts at Hubris Data Pros. When you're working with a partner that's promised to deliver your breakthrough AI solution by the end of the week, you know you've got Hubris.
Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom. Dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. Today, we will look at AI success and not so success. Amazon, for example, has adopted AI and launched a bunch of convenience stores, but you don't have to use the checkout line. That speeds things up a lot. ADT has a customer agent to help millions of customers select, order, and set up their own home security. Nike, the world's biggest brand, has launched an AI system that enables you to build your own sneaker on an online store. Now for some bad stuff. The city of New York has a chatbot that tells small businesses it's okay to break the law. It's set up to help small firms get legal advice. And sometimes it says, well, it's okay to fire somebody who complains too much or complains about sexual harassment or doesn't disclose a pregnancy. The website's been updated. Air Canada lost a court case after one of its chatbots lied about certain refunds. Their unsuccessful defense revolved around the idea that it was the chatbot, not the company, that was in fact liable. They couldn't be held responsible for what the AI was doing. Zillow used AI to estimate the value of homes and offer that amount to actually purchase the property. But the company shut down that business and took a $304 million write-down because they purchased homes for prices higher than they could turn around and sell them. Between now and next time, the one thing you can do is be realistic about AI. Historically, remember, nothing goes as people predict. If your title starts with a C or a V, do this. Think about what AI does for your current strategies. Forget this fear of missing out, FOMO stuff, all right? Early adopter phase is gone and done. If you have any other stories about AI or anything else, we'd love to hear them. Drop us a line at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
We're back with Wendy Lawhead for the Audio Data Rorschach Test, our game show segment. Now, I'm going to play a snippet of royalty-free music, royalty-free because we have no budget. And after I play it, tell us the first thing that pops into your head related to data or data projects or analytics or stuff like that. Okay, ready?
All right.
All right. Now, to make it fair, pick a number between 1 and 5.
4.
2, 3, 4. All right, here we go. So, what is this bringing to mind?
Okay, so when I hear this song, this reminds me of, okay, so there's the practice of, people call it munging.
Yeah.
Munging data. That's what that sound reminds me of. And so let's talk about this. We talked about low-code tools, right? Uh-huh. I'm a coder. I know how to code SQL. I get that in some Python here and there and that. But I use some low-code tools. But, man, I have worked with so many different types of data and data sources, like flat files and this and that and hitting databases and pulling things in and transforming. And so to me, data munging is like a dance. It's a little bit of this and that and a little mix of this and, you know, and you mash things together. And then in the end, you get this data product, which is going to help add value. So to me, that's the act of data munging, all of that noise right there.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, great. Wendy, thank you so very much for being our guest on the Rock Bottom Data Feed. It has been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's fun.
And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
It seems pretty clear that having well-curated, well-understood data is critically important, especially for AI. Data products are a great approach, as Wendy mentioned. Of course, you can choose to spend all of your time finding, researching, and preparing the data, but then that's not time spent generating business insights. And me, I prefer business insights.
This is John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom.
You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, The Fuss About AI, at our website, counterthreadedproductions.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter Threaded production, copyright 2024, all rights reserved.